right, everybody, welcome back in to Game Gone Wrong, a part of the Attitude of Aggression Wrestling Podcast and the Chairshot Radio Network family of shows, I guess we'll call it that. This is part two of Game Gone Wrong, and I know, like, I think the first episode I was calling them chapters, and I think we explained this on the last episode of Big Five Project, that we're calling them chapters on the show, and then when I was putting the show together, I realized, chapters doesn't sound so good. It's really going to be a seven-part series, and this is part two. And on this episode, we actually get into season eight with episode one of season eight, which I think is called Winterfell, if I remember correctly. Right, Tony? Is that the episode title for episode one of season eight? I think it's Winterfell.
It is.
And so it would make sense.
It would, since most of it was centered around Winterfell. That would make a lot of sense. So,
Even though I just got done watching it 50 minutes ago.
It's like, I don't remember the episode titles once they're gone. But if you guys remember part one of Game Gone Wrong, we really set, it was like an introductory episode kind of as to why we were doing this and to kind of recap seasons one through seven so that people following along with us would have kind of a background as to, okay, here's what's happened leading up to now. And on this episode here, part two, we're actually going to get into it and we're going to talk about Winterfell. So the actual beginnings, well, I mean, last episode was a beginning. This is where we get to the meat of season eight. But before we do that, we wanted to talk about something that has made all the news. And it's a big deal, and it comes straight out of the pages of Game of Thrones, mixed in with Jurassic Park. And that's, if you're thinking, that's a kind of a terrifying amalgamation of things, you're not wrong. But it's been on all the news this week. It does sound like something science fiction. It sounds like, wait, that's
we
not...
We made a dragon! We have dragons
that
now.
Might be coming.
We have a dragon. Do we put a blonde-haired bitch in a fire with some eggs and she walked out and now we got fucking dragons, Dave? We did it!
We did it.
It's just the show!
Unfortunately, all the dragons ate the rest of the people and that was the end of the whole thing. But in... they're dinosaur DNA. In the real world, though, scientists at, and I don't remember, and maybe one of you guys can look up some of this stuff and kind of, it's a science-based company in Texas, I believe. You know, if you're telling me the technological breakthrough of biology was going to happen in Texas, I would have called you a liar. But here you are. A biological group, a scientific group in Texas, has actually brought back from extinction dire wolves. Now, anybody who follows Game of Thrones knows that direwolves were a big, big deal in Game of Thrones. Giant wolves. Jon and Arya and all these other guys, all the Starks, they had direwolves of their own. And the death of the direwolves in a few places was one of the more traumatic events of Game of Thrones seasons one through seven. In the real world, direwolves, and I, honestly, guys, I'm going to be straight with you guys. I didn't even know they were a real thing until historically.
I didn't either.
I thought that was just some fictional, big-ass wolf. But as it turns out, dire wolves are very real, or at least they were. They had been extinct for 10,000 years. Yet, this group, and I'll wait for you guys to find the name of them,
I couldn't find it.
I'll look it up when we're talking about it. You know, but these guys, go ahead, Tony.
On April 7th, it was announced that they used gene editing technology to create three pups named Romulus, Remus, and Khaleesi, with traits resembling dire wolves, like white fur and larger builds. They extracted ancient DNA from dire wolf fossils, compared it to gray wolf DNA, and edited 14 genes to mimic dire wolf characteristics. The pups were born in late 2024 and early 2025 via surrogate dogs at 2,000-acre facilities. There you go.
Right.
Dispute the claim, saying these aren't true dire wolves, but genetically modified gray wolves.
Well, yes and no, because what I understand is that 95% of what they got was from just normal gray wolf. But like you're saying, it's that other 5% where they got DNA material from dire wolf fossils, which raises a question. Michael Crichton might have been an alien. He might have been an ET to come up with the theory that he came up with Jurassic Park. And then all these motherfuckers have gone around since then copying that and trying to replicate his fictional thing, which apparently had a basis in reality. And he wrote, Jurassic Park in 1990 or something crazy like that? So talk about way ahead of your time. But go ahead, Tony.
Here's the rest of that argument. Direwolves diverged from gray wolves millions of years ago, and the pups share 99.9% gray wolf DNA. Critics call it a PR stunt rather than a true de-extinction, though it's still a notable biotech achievement.
Critics can go fuck that. And you're going to hear, we're going to do the something where we're going to start coming up in as we're recording, not on this episode, but we're going to do something different. We're actually going to launch an unidentified history around the same time this episode drops. And yeah, I've got plenty to say about critics and skeptics. And this is what, and I mean, to me, it reminds me so much of what we do most of the time, which is pro wrestling. And the people there who just gaslight you and inflame you and just go off on any stupid thing that they want to go off on. And it's the same thing here. You know, it is a biological achievement. These, when you look at these pups, and they're just a few months old, they're massive. They're huge already. Cutest video you'll ever see are these dire wolves howling. I mean, that is just into breaking the cuteness meter. But it's, to me, it's a biological achievement. Yes, I understand what you're saying, that we didn't replicate. And what's interesting to me is now they are eyeing bringing back something else that's been extinct for many thousands. You guys want to guess what they're thinking about bringing back?
The dodo.
Common sense.
Well, DJ, that's an impossibility, but you want to take a second stab at that?
No, I'm wrong.
The woolly mammoth.
Pterodactyl.
DJ's got it.
Damn it. Yeah, I know they found an intact juvenile several years ago in the tundra in Russia.
Been testing it on mice. They've made woolly mice. No, that's true. That's honest to God what they're starting off doing. I've heard the story already.
I mean, if you think about it, doing a woolly mammoth makes sense. Elephants are all over the place. Well, not all over the place. And we won't get into the travesty that is the elephant situation and hunting elephants. But it's not going to be hard to take an elephant DNA, tweak that with woolly mammoth DNA, and bang, there you go. You've got now, of course, make sure that they're not growing up in the Serengeti, because that's not going to work out so well having all that hair out there. But I guess the science behind it is scientifically amazing. What?
The same people are working on the woolly mammoth, and they've created a woolly mouse by editing genes to express mammoth-like traits such as thicker, longer fur, cold tolerance, as proof of editing genotech.
So they're onto this thing, and it, you know, from a biological, scientific, genome standpoint, what they've accomplished is tremendous. I don't take anything away from there. I wanted to ask you guys, and yeah, keeping Jurassic Park, like Jurassic World put out a tweet when this happened, say, oh yeah, nothing could go wrong here at all. And I found that very humorous. Go ahead, Tony.
Doesn't this also almost seem like we're beginning to try and figure out a way to make super humans, super soldiers? Because basically what we're doing is introducing the traits we want into familiar things, right?
Genetic manipulation, absolutely.
Who's to say you can't do that with a human who shares a lot of genetic traits with a lot of different species on Earth?
They've been working on that on a much smaller scale. Like, okay, you want to guarantee you have a brown-eyed child. You know, they're working on ways to do that. If you want to make sure your child is born with certain physical attributes, physical traits, they've been working on that for a number of years now.
Right. And I don't know anything about genetics and gene modification other than what I read, but I hear that it's not that difficult to pull that off once you realize what to do and how to manipulate that. But it does raise, and Tunney's kind of going down the path I was going to go down, from a philosophical, moral, existential sort of aspect of things. Like Dr. Malcolm said in Jurassic Park, you guys realize you could, you never bothered to stop to think about whether you should. And this is where we run into this conundrum, right? Is this responsible? Because, okay, dire wolves, let's take this to the logical extent. You bring back dire wolf. People want to say that they're 95 to 99% gray wolf. It's that part that you don't know about that is a concern.
99.
Yeah, okay. So whatever the case is, but it's that part.
I mean, there's a big difference.
It is. It's that part that you don't know about. And what does that part do? And can you really? I keep going back to Jurassic Park, you know, and Dr. Malcolm. Nature selected the dinosaurs for extinction. Same argument with direwolf. For some reason, nature wanted them extinct. What's, you know, you start at woolly mammoth. Then do you bring back a saber-toothed tiger? And before long, you're fucking around and really trying to bring back dinosaurs and introduce them into this environment. And is that responsible or a good idea?
We're way past having a proper relationship with nature. Do you see the number of parking lots in the world, right? Like, we can just, we can start there and imagine nothing else is going on besides just that happened, right? So we're way the fuck past that. This more seems like just a shortcut in evolution, because species adapt, you know? So instead of decades or hundreds of, or maybe a thousand years of geographical evolution, right? Because of where they are and what they need to accomplish. And that's proven in especially so many species of animal around the world that they adapt to where they are. Certain species have same DNA, but they adapt differently in different parts of the world, right? So I feel like it's more of a shortcut as opposed to, you know, playing God or something of that nature. Like, what would you call modern medicine, right? Are you playing God or are you saving a life? You tell me.
Both, kind of, right? I mean, if you think about it.
Yeah. And some people will say that God is using those people to save lives, but then the same people ask, why do people not have success, right?
Yeah. For me, I'm just fascinated by the tech, by the science behind it all, like the ingenuity of humankind. And I'm a big science guy, like within moral boundaries, I support the science in most things. Like I want to see what we're capable of as a species. And I think sometimes bureaucracy holds us back. It definitely holds us back technologically. As we dig deeper into the other project that we want to work on, I'll say this, you know, out loud into a microphone. I've always fed my family, you know, my grandfather worked with the first rockets that went into space. So, you know, for me, I'll always support that kind of science. And I'm very fascinated to see where this goes, but also terrified. You know, when you think about the fact that we're able to do this now, you couple that with the explosion of AI, terrifyingly fascinating to think about where we're going to be in 100 years.
Yeah, no doubt about that.
About 10 years.
Yeah. Maybe 100 years, maybe too far.
And this conversation really does tie directly into what we're about to talk about on the other show, because there's a lot of that ingrained in all this and human evolution and where did we really come from and that sort of situation. But I agree with you, DJ, like the science, by the fact that they can do this is mind-numbing when you really think about it. It's like, wow, it's not just this does tie into an unidentified history where we're not talking science fiction anymore. This is not bandwagon nerds. This is not Star Wars. We aren't talking about fiction. This is reality now. And what's that, Tony? I think my wife's biggest concern, she was really unhappy that this had happened, because her concern is that what's going to happen? They're going to put them on some preserve somewhere. They're going to they're going to breed, unless you've figured out a way to make them not breed. They'll breed, they'll populate, they'll put them out on some preserve for fucking idiots to hunt and put a head on their wall. And she's not wrong, because there's that concern. But yeah, like, okay, what happens to these wolves? And I'm like, I don't know, maybe you take them out in the Yellowstone National Park and send them loose with the rest of the wolves. But then you upset the ecological balance out there. You know, these things grow and are able to hunt bear and bison and that kind of stuff. Then really, what are we talking about here? You got to have some safeguards in a place. How are you going to do this? Are you going to limit this? And what are you going to do with these wolves when they get older?
The interesting thing is, you know, is this just proving a concept so that there are places where we have extinct species that would be brilliant to be reintroduced to their natural habitat in their natural biosphere and whatever hemisphere of the world they are. There's plenty of insects and different things of that nature and birds that have been wiped out. And how about bees too, right? Like, talk about the bee problem and everything, how everything is connected and how many things can go extinct before everything just breaks down, right?
If we lose the bees, we're fucked anyway, so.
So I'm hoping that this is more of like proof of concept with something like this, and they already use and involved in this. But like you said, yeah, it's irresponsible to not think long term when you're doing something
gotta
like this.
Gotta have a plan. Like you guys are talking about bees. Like a couple weeks ago, when it first started warming up out here in my house, there were 7 bees in various states of dying, dead or dying, or you know, on the. And it's like. I'm like watching this, and every time I turn around, there's another one on the floor. And I'm like, what the fuck? Where are these even coming from? And, you know, you read about it while they were starving. They were trying to find some food. And I'm like, I don't know why they're out already. It's not really that warm yet. But, yeah, the bees are a big concern. And I think anything nature or that sort of thing, you got to have a long-term plan. You can't – because otherwise you do get into the whole thing. Yeah, we can, but you didn't think whether you should because you didn't have that long-term plan. You didn't have anything in place as to why you were doing this. You just thought, let's see if we can do this. Oh, we can. Now what? I didn't think that far. Because that's irresponsible as fuck. So
yeah.
All right. I just thought, I know in our friend AJ, he was in the Cheershot radio chat, was saying, he posted a thing about direwolves, and he said, you know, I know you guys were talking about Game of Thrones, and I was like, funny you should mention that, AJ, because we're about to talk about direwolves here. So, I'm with you guys. The science behind it is fascinating, and it's mind-numbing to think that, you know, how life imitates art, right? I mean, this was an idea put out there in a novel that came out in 90 or 89 or something, turned into the biggest movie in the history of the world, a movie that revolutionized CGI as we know it. And it's all wrapped around the same technology. And here we are in 2025. It's real. It's here.
Yeah.
And yeah, you start wondering, what else can they bring back? Tony mentioned the dodo bird. I know there's thoughts of that. Do you do something like a saber-toothed tiger? Because we've got tigers. So how far are you really going to stretch that?
I think it's more in the species that we really don't know anything about as just everyday people, like in the scientific community, as far as, you know, how species interact and you know, make this gigantic biodome that we live in, Earth, continue to function properly so we can all go outside and breathe air and function. I think those little things, I think that's where it needs to be involved in. That's just my completely uneducated, you know, took AP bio in high school and stayed at a Holiday Inn Express last night.
Nice,
so.
Professor Tunney. Awesome. That's great.
I need another nickname.
Yeah, here. I mean, I don't foresee them doing something stupid like, hey, let's go and bring back the Megalodon. It's like, I don't think that's a good idea, guys. That's not a good idea.
That sounds like a horrible
that's
plan.
That's a horrible
next
plan.
Tuesday, Velociraptors, watch out for the backseat of your car. Yeah.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
All right, you guys want to talk about Game of Thrones? Let's get into
it. Let's
get into Game Gone Wrong. I mean, that was a fun little diversion and interesting stuff. I do want a direwolf puppy. Don't get me wrong. I don't think the Pomeranians would like it too much. Maybe for now, not for long.
You never know. Like, watch like they boss around the direwolf. Like the direwolf hates everyone, but the Pomeranians just take. Well, you know, like
if you've ever been around dogs, DJ, you got a Pomeranian, right? So you know,
yes,
you know that the little dogs are typically the alphas over the big ones.
They are. Little dogs are assholes, man.
Bunch of Napoleons.
They are.
That is right. All right. So episode 1, season 8, Game of Thrones, Game Gone Wrong. I'm going to tell you guys right off the bat. No problem so far. Love this first episode. Thought the first episode was great. Nothing I'm seeing here is red flags and throwing. I mean, there's a couple things that are like kind of side eye a little bit, but nothing about this episode clues me in with 5 to go that we're going to run into big time problems. But I know how things change. And a lot of these like this episode is relatively short. They get progressively longer as we go along. So let's start talking about it. We start off Daenerys and Jon Snow. They arrive in Winterfell, and Arya is kind of watching this stuff from the road a little bit. And like, there's some kid who climbs a tree and they see this army that stretches for as far as the eye can see in all directions. Right. So you get, you know, Daenerys shows up, Jon Snow, Tyrion's there, all these other ones, they come to Winterfell with the army, the dragons go overhead. Gotta remember, these motherfuckers haven't seen dragons in hundreds of years. And these two dragons come lumbering overhead, and it's like, oh my God, yeah, two dragons, that's right. The one part that kind of, I don't know, I'll let you guys chime in on this thing. They told Jon and Daenerys that the Night King had breached the wall and that they had a dragon. And they just kind of no-sold it. And I don't know if that was just me reading into that, but they just kind of like didn't really acknowledge it. Like maybe they knew that the Night King was going to drag him out of the lake and turn him. I don't know. But like when Cersei gets told that the Night King has breached that the wall has fallen and they are on the march, she goes, good. So it's like, okay, little different kind of reactions there. Then we've also got the aspect of they all meet in the hall, right? And Jon's introducing Daenerys to all the other Northerners, you know, and they are not exactly drinking the Kool-Aid so far. They're like, we made you king of the North, not her. And you could see a little bit of friction there, but Jon, as he's excellent at doing, diffuses that whole thing pretty quickly and says, you guys put your trust in me. I trust her. Put your trust in her. So forth and so on. And that's how kind of things get started with Jon and Daenerys arriving to Winterfell, the reunion. Sansa not exactly feeling Daenerys right off the bat. There's some friction there, but you know, I guess let's stop there and let me go, DJ. I'll go to you first. Your thoughts early on in you know the big arrival in Winterfell with Daenerys and Jon showing up and all this reunion thing going on.
I think it kind of the reunion in Winterfell kind of gives you some perspective as to why Cersei says good about the Night King and the dragon breaching the wall, because right now in Winterfell they're fractured. Like even the Starks as a family are fractured. Sansa is questioning, you know, Jon, you know what, we made you king. Why did you bend the knee? Arya, while she's glad to see Jon, is very skeptic of the situation. Meanwhile,
and that was Cersei that was like a really, because Jon and Arya hadn't seen each other since really early in the season, right?
Right, right. She went on her journey and, you know, he didn't know what happened to her. Last she heard, he had died. So, yeah, it's an emotional moment between the two of them. But again, Arya has been on this journey where now she's questioning everything. But like I was saying about Cersei, she knows they're fractured. And she, in her head, thinks that her and her forces can handle what's coming. Jon and them can't, then in her head, she's probably thinking Jon and Daenerys will bend the knee to her. You guys need me more than I need you. And I think that's what's going on in Cersei's head at this moment.
Yeah, fair. That's probably a fair assumption. Tunny, your thoughts on this this opening scene with everybody arriving in Winterfell and kind of some of the tension that is palpable as we get going here.
There's a lot of emotional reunions. I think the reason I didn't say anything in the midst of this gigantic parade, you could say, and yes, it's the procession of the armies, you know, flowing into Winterfell. She wanted to talk to Jon alone, and that's what ends up happening later on in the episode, right? She knew that Jon would find out that she's fine, and he did ask, like, almost immediately, you know, with Sansa. Bran is about business. And Jon recognized that right away, and so does everybody else when Daenerys and Sansa are about to politic in front of everybody, and he's like, we don't have time for this.
Right, okay, and you're right. It's Bran who tells everybody what happened, right? He's the one who tells Jon and Daenerys the Night King's breached the wall, and they've got an undead dragon. Now, like I said, it's Bran who tells them that. I got the feel they kind of no-sold that, either out of shock or denial or just whatever the case may be. But it is. But Bran, like you're saying, he's all business.
They had a face. They had a face.
Yeah,
they had a face, but I don't think they. Again, they haven't seen Bran in a while, so they don't know the expanse of his power and his new role in all this. Like they still see him as the paraplegic little kid.
Right.
No, but his words ring true to them, and Samwell kind of clues Jon into it a little bit deeper with not so deep words down in the Stark memoriam at the end of the episode.
Right. And Bran is like Jon's really excited to see Bran. And like you said, Tony, Bran's all business. This is the three-eyed Raven. Bran, it's like The Shining. Danny isn't here now, Mrs. Torrance. Bran is not here now, Jon. This is the three-eyed Raven.
He's the tree. He's about to become the tree.
From there, I mean, other cool stuff that happens. Jon gets to ride a dragon. And honestly, it's a cool scene. Obviously, a very cool scene. And there's stuff like, and I know like one of the things like Sansa asks Daenerys, which will probably be the title of this episode, you know, what do dragons eat anyway? And Daenerys' response is whatever they want. But in this, this scene reminded me a lot of Avatar when the guy who, I forget, Sam or whatever the hell his name is, the guy who turns into the Avatar, the first time he rides one of those fell beasts, one of the, I forget what they call them, but you know, it takes him a while to get the hang of it. John's the same way. He's holding on for dear fucking life during this initial dragon ride. Then he finally gets the hang of it, basically takes, they find this nice isolated place where you assume they can get it on. And as John and Daris are getting busy with each other or getting, you know, at least making out, the look on one of the dragon's faces is fucking beautiful because it's
the dogs watching.
Huh?
The dogs are watching.
The dogs are watching. And the
dog babies, like, right? Like, she, they're not literally her babies, but like they're her babies. And the dogs are like, we don't want to see your balls, bitch.
Yeah. And they look at, one of them looks pretty approving about the whole thing, kind of almost a smile on its face a little bit there. So, so yeah, John is now a dragon rider, which if you've watched House of the Dragon, you will realize that is a big deal. You know, and they didn't think about it here when they were doing this. But now looking back after we've watched two seasons of House of the Dragon, you're like, that's a pretty big deal because not everybody can ride these things and they don't let just anybody ride them.
Quite the regression in technology over a couple hundred years, or maybe they need to relearn it. But there used to be saddles and harnesses and you used to be able to strap yourself in. And now they're just on the dragon holding on to a pair of scales.
Because there were no dragons for 200 years. There was no market for dragon saddles, Tony. Come on, man.
There were no utensils at medieval times. Hence, there are no utensils in medieval times.
Just give me my fucking turkey wing.
Sorry, from House of the Dragon to the Game of Thrones, and that over that little span there, beyond like museums and novelty shops, there's very little need for a dragon saddle maker.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, did we forget this technology?
Technology. They're savages.
They are a bunch of beasts. I mean, Tony, your thoughts on the dragon ride. And like, I mean, yeah, I know you already chimed in with the dogs you're watching and that sort of thing, but yeah, I mean, their romance. I mean, John and Daenerys, yes, their romance is sweet. It's kind of beautiful. Even like Davos is looking at them thinking, okay, this is a power couple that can rule the world sort of thing. We know by the end of the episode, and actually we knew from the end of season 7, that relationship is bound to get complicated. So it's
very
like,
targeted.
Yeah, exactly. Enjoy it while it's here. But what are your thoughts, Tony, about this?
There's a couple. There's so many really good one lines in this episode. And there's so many good family reunions in this episode. I just wanted to mention that. But two of them happened here. Something about young, good looking people don't want to listen to old people. When the three of them are up there with, you know,
it was the eunuch. Tyrion and I forget the
Davos. Tyrion looks over at Davos and he goes, "I'm not as old as him." That them. And then after they get off the dragons, and John looks at Daenerys and says, "You've completely ruined horses for me." You know, were a couple of really cool lines. I'm not gonna lie, I haven't watched this episode in a while. So at least half a dozen years, maybe.
So what'd you think?
What'd you think since it actually aired?
Yeah, what'd you think going back to it after?
I like was tearing up with the family reunions. That's why it's much on me, because like when John hugs Bran and John sees Sansa, and then John and Aya finally get together, and then there's a couple other different ones too that people just haven't seen each other in a while. So I never had a problem with this season. So you know, I'm interested to get to the parts where either of you have problems.
Well,
because this was not a great episode.
Right. And I think, you know, at the end of this, I want to kind of ask you guys at the end, when we get to the end of this, just like, you guys know how this turns out. So I'm kind of curious going back, both of you gone back now and watched this, you know, knowing what you know without spoiling anything for me, you know, do you look at this episode any differently? And you don't have to answer that now. We'll talk about it at the end. But let's keep going, because you get a big moment that takes place between Sam, Daenerys, and Jorah, where Daenerys starts off thanking Sam for saving Jorah Mormont. And then it's all well and good, and Daenerys wanting to do anything she can for Sam. And then we get the revelation that Daenerys executed Sam's father and his brother because they didn't bend the knee. And it's awkward to say the very least. And Daenerys actually almost kind of seems a little shaken by it, even though she's going to adamantly say, you know, this is what, you know, this was what needed to be done. Sam goes and he finds John and he kind of not confronts him, but seeks something from John, you know, like, you know, and he's all like, well, John's like, I've executed men who betrayed me. And Sam's like, and you've also forgiven them. So Sam, you know, right there, you get to see a difference between John and Daenerys that Sam immediately.
You're leaving out the line that immediately follows that. And John says, that's when I wasn't king.
Right. True. True. Now, despite all this going on, you get the big reveal where John is told by Sam about
your fuck your cousin. Ooh, dun, dun, oh, face. Ooh,
that's oh. Right. John is Aegon Targaryen, the legitimate son of Rhaegar and Targaryen and Lyanna Stark, rightful heir to the Iron Throne. Not Daenerys, not Cersei, not any of these motherfuckers. It's you, John / Aegon. It should be your throne. You are the rightful heir. John doesn't seem to be very. He doesn't believe it at first because it really conflicts with who he thinks Ned Stark is. And in the end, Sam basically confirms to John what he knew all along, just what a great man Ned was, that Ned prevented, because if Robert had found out about it, he would have killed John immediately, gotten rid of that heir. Ned protected Jon Snow all this time from being, you know, wiped out, murdered by King Robert. And, you know, under the guise that he was my bastard son. So, I mean, and now we come full circle and you think about Ned Stark and my God, this guy, we talked about it in the first part one of A Game Gone Wrong, that he was only in one season, but man, his presence carries all the way through and it's still carrying through here in season 8. It's still Ned Stark, his sacrifice, what he did and at the expense of his own marriage, perhaps to protect Jon Snow. That's a man right there. Deej, I go to you first.
I want to kick it back to Ned Stark because something that Tunney reminded us that John said to Sam, he's like, you know, I wasn't king. Go back to the very, very first episode when Ned had to execute somebody and he made the boys watch. Like he took all of them and it was a hard execution. I forget what the reason was, but it wasn't like it was a situation where it was like kind of difficult. Ned's like, I'm doing this because I have to, not necessarily because I want to. And that's the upbringing. And that's what John means in that moment. It's like sometimes as king, you have to make decisions that are unpopular. And it calls all the way back to the first episode of the show in that moment.
Tony, got anything on this?
It's one of the most noble characters in television, movies, streaming series, like ever, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's funny because, you know, you come to the actor and you're like, oh, we got like maybe the most important role in the series. Oh, great. It's only the first season, though.
Yeah.
but like you said, everything about him continues to move forward in the series. But that's the North. Like he embodied where he was from and what he took control of.
Yeah, I mean, you can only imagine it's going to get more complicated from here with John conflicted over. I mean, and John's never been overly ambitious. He's been very reluctant. He was reluctant to be king. He was reluctant to be knight, you know, commander of the Night's Watch. He was reluctant to be all that shit. And now he's presented with the, you know, you should be on the throne, which theoretically could mean he could call an end to all the war going on. Now, no one's going to go along with that shit. But again, we're talking theory here, not actuality. But, let's talk about, you know, our favorite douchebag of the year, because we've had Joffrey and we had Ramsay and now we've got Euron. And
oh, that fucker,
this guy, he goes to King's Landing. He's got the Golden Company, which is 20,000 men plus ships that just wiped out Yara's fleet in season 7. And he presents this to Cersei and he's like, do I get to fuck you now? Was basically what he was saying. And she's like, no, when the war is over. And he makes a compelling argument, sort of. And Cersei kind of, she's walking away and then she looks over her shoulder saying, all right, get your naked ass in here. And he does. And so Euron finally gets a tap. Dad ass! Had to bring a little attitude of aggression in his thing.
Here's the Attitude of Aggression podcast.
That's right. And he basically says, he pats her on the stomach, I'm going to put a prince in your belly, not realizing there's already a prince in there.
That is my favorite scene in this whole episode because Cersei's got this look on her face like, yeah, about that.
Yeah, about that. And he's doing all the stuff that, you know, that we do is when we're teenagers, young men, or even, I guess, you know, you always want to know, how do you measure up against the air quoting competition, right?
Last week, what are you talking about?
Yeah, exactly. I just asked. Yeah, exactly. And you know, she's like, you may be the most arrogant man I ever met, but I like that. So it's fun. It's fun stuff. Euron finally gets himself some of his. And then also related to this whole thing is, and I forget who, it's the mad, I call him the mad scientist. I don't know who he is. He's the guy who redid the mountain into Frankenstein, right? He basically gives Bronn, he interrupts Bronn's little tryst with a threesome. Well, it's not really a three. I guess it's a more like a quadsome because it's three girls and him. And he tells Bronn that, you know, you need to murder your traitors, her traitorous brothers. And he gives them Joffrey's crossbow to kill Tyrion and now Jaime. So Cersei is full on about wiping out the Kingslayer and killing him, even though she's still pregnant with his kid. But hey, details, right? So Tunny, I go to you first. This stuff with Euron, with Cersei, and then, you know, the big thing with Bronn is supposed to be the one who's killing Tyrion and Jaime. And I really seriously have my doubts that Bronn is going to kill Jaime Lannister, who's as close as you can probably, either of these guys are as close to he can get to a best friend.
Well, you know, Bronn has always taken the money. So, I mean, he's got an interesting offer. That crossbow has a lot of history to it. As far as Cersei goes, she's just planning on picking clean whatever's left over from the war. And I think that's been her plan the whole time. Let me keep enough with me and gather enough here where whatever happens up there, I'm going to try and pick everything clean. So I think that's her mindset. And that's how I felt the first time I watched it. It's interesting, like, the elephants didn't make it. We got a bunch of horses, but the elephants
didn't make
it. And the guy's like, well,
the elephants don't travel well by ship.
Yeah. It's like, yeah, that's true.
Ships don't also travel well with elephant. I mean, you know, but Noah was not around to help out.
Yeah, exactly. You know, I mean, they didn't travel well in Lord of the Rings either. Oh, wait, Tunny's never.
Gandalf, more
like fuck off as far as Tunny's concerned.
Elijah Wood.
Fuck off the gray. DJ, your thoughts on the whole situation with Euron.
The dude from Rudy.
I kind of glossed over and lost in all this discussion is the fact that, speaking of Euron, Theon has now, because Euron had, Yara captive on one of the ships. And Theon raided one of the ships and rescued her. And in their escape, you know, she's like, we can just go back home and, you know, walk away from all this. And he's like, no, I have to go fight with the North. Now, remember, he fucked over the Starks, you know, so he's not exactly welcome back in Winterfell. But we talked last episode about him trying to find his bravery, and he's finding it. And for him to want to go back to the people that he screwed over the most and want to fight with them is a huge, huge step for his character.
Yeah. I did like DJ, her explanation, though, on why to go back to the Iron Islands, because just in case they need to retreat somewhere to regroup, they can come there where the dead can't get to, right? So, like,
they're in an isolated.
Yeah, and it gave Theon an out as well to continue to be a coward, but no, he didn't. He's like, I've righted this wrong, because she had but shit out of him after he fucking freed her, right?
Yeah.
He's like, I have one more wrong to right. You can see it in his eyes.
Right. And I mean, his redemption arc, you know, we always talk about these redemption arcs in these hero stories, is really cool, because he's gone from just an absolute piece of shit to being completely humbled by Ramsay's Bolton, you know, and castrated and all that fun stuff. And now, like I said, he's finding his balls, even though he doesn't have any longer, which is ironic, and trying to right this great wrong that existed, that he knows he fucked the Starks over. He knows he fucked Winterfell over, and he's trying to make right by that, even at the cost of his own life. So, yeah, I'm glad you brought that up, DJ, because Theon rescuing Yara, getting her out of there, Yara saying, yeah, the dead can't come here, because, you know, if you've watched any of these shows, Walking Dead, World War Z, or any of these zombie apocalypse things, they don't do well on water. So, speaking of the dead, though, we get one of the cool scenes is some of our heroes survive the wall collapsing, including our friend Tormund, who is creeping through, I don't know where they are, some catacomb somewhere. Maybe it's under the wall. Maybe it's what's left of Castle Black.
Yeah, that's Castle Black.
Okay.
Yeah.
So they're making their way through what remains of Castle Black. They run into some more survivors. I love the guy saying, his eyes are blue, and Tormund saying, my eyes have always been blue.
Always been blue.
Yeah.
I love Tormund.
Yeah. Oh, he's great. He got a bunch of like fertilizer commercials out of this series,
He did. And as they're going through the remains of Castle Black, they come across a message from the Night King, which is pretty graphic and gruesome, where they've taken a kid, they've killed him, they've basically skewered him to a wall and surrounded him with the limbs of God knows who else. The kid has been turned into an undead. And of course, he starts screeching, can't do anything to it, but they light the kid on fire and everything ignites. And you get to see the sigil of the Night King and kind of like the symbol for season 8 of Game of Thrones. If you look at the cover for like the DVD of it, it's this symbol in flowers, not in body parts and limbs and shit. But so the Night King is certainly sending a message to everybody that, you know, they're here and they're here to do business.
Winter is here.
Winter's here. And it's coming all over your face. Wait, no, what? Wrong show.
Welcome to Money Shot Gone Wrong.
Money Shot of Aggression. Tormund and Beric Dondarrion, I guess, is the guy, the other guy, Beric. That's right. So they had gruesome spiral body parts. Reanimated young Lord Ned Umber is the kid. White Walkers are close. No doubt about that. Tony, your thoughts on the Night King's message to everybody saying, we here, bitches.
Yeah, it's a gruesome scene. You know, it kind of reinvokes the fact that he's there to get rid of all of mankind. Like, he's not going to stop until everybody is turned, right? And he's going to sniff them out and hunt them down however he needs to do it, however many people he needs to bring, right? So... yeah, it's a very I'm trying to remember all this for the first time, but yeah, that's a very infamous scene to start the season off. The most infamous scene of the entire episode.
Oh, by far. I mean, it's that and the dragon ride that are the highlights of this episode as far as like scenes you remember. Now, there's moments you remember more, of course, you know, John being told about his lineage, that sort of thing. But speaking of scenes that you really remember, well, actually, let me go DJ first. Your thoughts about the Night King's message.
It really solidifies that at the end of the day, after 7 seasons and 1 episode, all the politics aside, all the whoring aside, all the incest aside, the backdrop has been winter is coming. And that is your symbol. Winter is here. This is what this we've been building up to is this moment. The walkers have now broken through the wall. They're loose in the world. And the rest of humanity had better get its shit together, or else they're going to get wiped off the face of the earth.
I just love that DJ brought whoring and incest into this Game of Thrones conversation. I mean, that's important stuff. It's there.
It was National Siblings Day the other day.
It was. Yesterday was National Siblings Day.
Oh, you're my sister. Would it help if you went back to thinking I'm your sister? So.
Well, we're going to get a OMG moment once you get to the end of the episode. So.
Oh, do we? We have an OMG moment? Oh, this last part?
Right at the end. So you're going to cover the John thing first, but Jamie and Bran.
Oh, that, yeah. Okay, so, yeah, let's get to it, because this is really where the episode ends, where you get Jamie arrives in Winterfell. He's looking a little bit more weathered, I think. Obviously, he's stressed out. And that's the final shot of this episode. Jamie arrives in Winterfell, comes face-to-face with Bran, who's just looking at him like... I don't know if he's looking at him like you're just the biggest piece of shit and yeah, I remember you, or if he's just disinterested in full tree mode, like Tunney said. But we have to remember, Jamie's the one who pushed Bran out of the tower in episode 1. Awkward to say the very least, but I can't ask you guys, where do you think this goes? Because you guys know where it goes, but I will ask Tunney, I'll go to you first. This awkward tension to end this episode with Jamie and Bran, and Jamie recognizes it immediately. When he sees this kid and he's like, ah, shit. Pretty damn cool, intense way to end this first episode.
It's a great episode. I'm not necessarily going to answer your question.
I don't think you can.
I love this episode. Like, literally watching it an hour and a half ago, finishing up about that. It was emotional. The funny thing is, like, this whole idea came about when I was rewatching this series for the third time at the end of 2024. And I had finished the first 7 seasons before the end of 2024. So 3 months later, I get to watch that next episode, right? So I never watch recaps. I had to watch the recap. I'm like, all right, maybe I should watch the recap here, because it's been 3 months. But I just love the episode. Like, you know, we're reconnecting stories with these people coming back together. And it's not just a family. It's Tarly and Mormont and things of that nature, right? So I'm very excited for Dave to start reacting to some of the questionable episodes that other people have questions about, because I don't.
Deej, I don't think you can answer that question directly either, but do you want to dance around it like Tunny did? That was really good, Tunny. By the way, that was awesome.
I think I can dance around the scene without spoiling anything, because remember, at this point, the Starks don't know, at least as far as I'm aware, that Jaime pushed Bran out of the window. They just know he fell and he was paralyzed. They don't know anything beyond that.
Bran ratted them out, dude.
I don't know that he ever got a chance, because everything went to hell and they had to rush him out. Remember, he was still very much invalid when they had to rush him out of Winterfell the first time.
He was on the run with Hodor and the other girl.
Never got the chance to say anything. So you remember when they're doing the political meeting, Sansa announces that the Lannisters are coming to help, which of course is met with a resounding thud by the rest of her, the rest of her chambers. And, suddenly a Lannister who paralyzed their brother is showing up in town, and Jaime's got this, ah, crap, this is probably going to, if this kid said something, or if he's going to say something, this could put this entire relationship at jeopardy. So without spoiling anything, I think I can say that much.
Right. Well, I'll just say Bran's, you know what? Yeah, you're right, DJ.
Say no more, sir. Shut up.
Yeah. we will get there soon enough.
Well, shut up. Yeah, we might have to do this at like every episode.
Tony, shut up. DJ, shut up.
Coming full circle, going back and like, DJ, I know Tony kind of answered this. Like, what did you think going back to this episode, knowing what you know in the end, do you look at this episode any differently? Are there things that you picked up on? You say, I should have picked up on that.
I remember it fairly well. Because like you said, remember when we saw the final series or the final season, I'd already had it spoiled for me. Like I had, it was all spoiled for me. I kind of knew what happened. So I went into this already kind of knowing what was going on. So I really don't watch this any differently. But like Tunny, I enjoyed this season. I didn't have a problem with it. I could look at certain aspects as we move forward, and there are certain arguments that people made. And it's a discussion we'll probably have to wrap this whole project up. I could look at that and say, okay, yeah, I could see that, but it didn't diminish my enjoyment of it any.
Fair enough, man. I greatly enjoyed episode 1. Came out of it, told my wife, yeah, I don't see any problems yet. She goes, you will. I'm like, thanks, babe. I appreciate the confidence. But yeah, a really strong start to season 8. I mean, amongst all the many things that we're watching right now, I was really glad to wedge this one in there. Fun stuff. The next episode, episode 2, which will be part 3 of Game Gone Wrong, is called A Knight of the Seven Kingdoms. I don't think there's much foreshadowing there, but, we'll see what happens. But good times to be had all the way around, guys. I don't want to belabor this. We've talked direwolves. We've talked the first episode of season 8. Fun stuff all the way around for this second part of Game Gone Wrong. Excellent work. We are legends amongst podcasters. I'm just going to throw that out there. Just toot our own Valerian horn or something. Oh, that's a different show. Never mind. Tony, I'm going to go to you first, sir. Let people know, where can they check you out on all the social media platforms that you got going on thechairshot.com and that sort of fun stuff. It's WrestleMania week officially, guys. We're 1 week out.
Penta is the new person with the most famous strut in professional wrestling, by the way, since you brought up. You can find me walking past any mirror, checking myself out. That's where you can check me out. No, you can follow me at PC Tunny on every social media platform. Chairshot Radio Network, sports entertainment on all your favorite streaming networks. And just in case this comes out before WrestleMania, Ray Cash doing WrestleMania week with a whole bunch of people. Check it out.
And I am going to plug something that will be coming out on Attitude of Aggression. Ray and I are going to be recording it as we're recording this probably tomorrow. We're looking at a very special episode of Attitude of Aggression, a very kind of a cool concept that Ray kind of started and I modified it and Ray jumped in with the modification. And I think you guys are going to enjoy it. I've tabulated the votes. We have winners. That's all I'll say. DJ, where can people, what's up, Tony? Nope.
Do we have losers?
Oh, we got losers, but, you know, we got winners, too. Yeah, you got to have losers.
Chain smokers and boozers.
I mean, second place is just the first loser, right? So that's one way to look at it. Deej, where can people check you out on all of your social media platforms and what you got going on, my friend?
You can find myself, Rob, and Jason on the Mindless Wrestling Podcast on the Chairshot Radio Network. We drop every Saturday morning. We got a fresh new episode coming out at you this week, which have already aired by the time this hits the podcasting airwaves. Myself, I'm also doing something with Ray Cash the week of WrestleMania. We are basically building WWE's top roster. We're taking their biggest stars, ranking them, and then building a roster out of those guys. It's a lot of fun. He and I did our first episode last week, doing another one this week. Before I get out of here, I want to invite you to go over to prowrestlingtees.com/thechairshot. From there, you can look at, browse, peruse, if you will, all the t-shirt options available from your favorite Chairshot Radio Network podcast. Go pick them up. Go check them out. Pick one up. The starving artist on these shows will thank you. Your body will thank you if you spend a couple dollars more and pick one up in soft style. That is prowrestlingtees.com/thechairshot.
Oh, I see somebody has given you the script. Very good, DJ. That was awesome.
I wrote the fucking script.
Did you? Okay.
I did.
Nice. So that's DJ's pro. Yeah, there's three specific Pro Wrestling Tees like promos. DJ has one. I have one, and Patrick has one, and they're all excellent.
Only one of us uses the word giblet.
Yeah, and I use nipples, and DJ uses peruse, so it's pretty even.
That's awesome. As far as me, of course, you can follow me on X and Blue Sky at Attitude Ag. That is at Attitude AGG, Facebook.com/Attitude of Aggression, and at Attitude of Aggression, all one word, on Instagram and Threads. I really don't know what you're going to hear next on Attitude of Aggression at this point. It's like, there's a few things coming out. I don't know the order.
Four different things going.
I know we got a few different things, but I know that the next, before we get to Game Gone Wrong, we are going to go back to the Big Five Project to talk about King of the Ring 95. I mean, yeah, exactly. It's rough. It's tough, guys. It's like eating.
Yeah.
Shoe leather. It's stinky. Stinky.
But we gotta get tougher than a $2 steak.
We gotta get through it and from there it gets better. We got one more shitty one to do and then things start to pick up. Bear with me. But until next time, here on Game Gone Wrong, we will catch you guys and we'll see what happens next in season 8 of Game of Thrones. Until next time, you guys be safe. We will talk to you soon. Talk to you later.
May I ask, how are we meant to feed the greatest army the world has ever seen?
While I ensured our stores would last through winter, I didn't account for Dothraki, Unsullied, and 2 full-grown dragons. What do dragons eat, anyway?
Whatever they want.